This morning in the meditation, we're going to continue the focus on sensations in the body that Vance introduced yesterday. And I want to add some specific instructions this morning on working with pain. Because of all the kinds of sensations that visit one in meditation, this is one of the most regular guests. So we need to have a special eye out, not only for the sensations of pain, but just as important, how we're relating to it. So first of all, when a sensation of pain arises, most of our mainstream cultural backgrounds have not given us very many tools for relating with it. You know, the typical advice is rush to the medicine cabinet and grab some Advil. Or it launches this whole wave of opioid addiction that has led to so many deaths in this country. And doctors, you know, make a lot of living off trying to take care of people's physical pain. And some of it is appropriate and an accurate response, but a lot of it is kind of an overblown fear of feeling any pain in the body. So in meditation, especially as we're encouraged to sit still for up to an hour at a time, we have many opportunities for revising our relationship to pain. And it really is an opportunity because there's a lot of learning in this area. Just because something is unpleasant doesn't mean that it's dangerous. And I think that's the first response, conditioned response often to pain is, it's attacking me. It's going to harm me. It's going to cripple me or whatever. So there are some pains that we need to be wary of in sitting meditation, particularly in two areas, especially if you're on the floor. Look out in the chair too. One is knees and one is back. So with pain in the knees, sometimes, I mean, I've had friends who have decided to sit through very intense knee pain because it was the demonstration of the resolve, the aditana, the determination in sitting. And they've gotten up to find that they've injured themselves, putting too much stress on a vulnerable joint by sitting through the pain, which actually was a warning signal. Hello? Take care of me. The other area that can be overlooked is pain in the back. So for meditators, a lot of the posture rests in the lower back. And if we stress that too much also, we can cause greater weakness, greater instability. So in those two areas, knees and pain, you don't want to just push blindly through, but you can push a little bit. And the way to test is, if you get up and walk out of the hall, does the knee pain or back pain go away within a few minutes of walking? If it does, you're okay. If it persists longer than a few minutes, that's a warning sign. And then you might want to shift your posture for the next sit or for another day or something, perhaps move to a chair. If you're sitting in a chair and you're getting knee pain, it might be a sign that lying down meditation would be better. And that's fine. We can talk later in the retreat about how to do lying down meditation. There's a risk there too, right? Conk. You conk out. But there are ways to work with that. We can talk about that. So with pain that's intense in the knees and back, be careful. Check it out after with a little bit of walking. And in general, in working with pain, it is such a fruitful area for exploration. But we have a guideline about that too. We say it's really useful to work with pain. It's not so useful to work with agony. So whatever that borderline is for you, there's no objective standard here. Whatever that borderline is, if it's veering on agony for you, then it's fine to shift your posture. Just get up. Stand for a few minutes. Then sit back down. Or make an adjustment to the way you're sitting. You know, sometimes even just leaning forward, rocking from side to side, can alleviate some of that pain, and then you can almost settle back in and start fresh. So that's totally fine. There are types of retreats where you are not allowed to move at all. I was sitting a Zen session once, just once. And in the middle of the session, one of the attendants came up and gave me a firm whack on the shoulder with a stick because I had moved slightly. I hadn't even really been aware of it, but he had keen eyes. We're not like that. Nobody's going to be coming around and whacking you. So if you need to shift your posture a little bit for ease in the sitting, that's totally fine. But in the guided, I want to give instructions on how to work with pain when it comes. I don't need to talk about it beforehand, but I'll give those instructions as we go in the sitting. But remember, if it feels like the pain is too much, you're fine to shift your posture. Try to do that shift slowly and mindfully. Be present. Notice the sensations in the body as you shift, but it's fine to shift. So a guideline on when to shift: when the pain is overwhelming the mindfulness, when it's basically really hard to stay present because the pain is strong enough that it captures the attention and our reactivity is strong. I'll talk more about that. Okay, so with that as a prelude, pain is useful, agony not so much. Feel free to shift if it's getting near that kind of border. Okay, so we can begin the formal meditation. So please take your posture, which is both upright and relaxed. And you're probably beginning to realize that this balance of the posture really refers to a balance in the mind. We want to find a balance in our mind that's alert, energized, and interested, and at the same time relaxed, tending to calm, not striving. So the posture of the body sets the tone for the mind's approach, for the mind's attitude. So first, just settling into the experience of the body and sitting. Letting go of any obvious areas of holding in the forehead, the eyes, the jaw, the shoulders, the belly, the hands. And having the sense that your attention can pervade the whole body. Mind can be in contact with sensations throughout the body. No part is closed off to our attention. Throughout the body, there will be areas that are showing the arising of sensations. There may be areas where no sensation is apparent. That's fine. Don't worry about that or make a problem. That's the way the body shows up for us. Opening the attention to sounds, to bring in this receptive and effortless quality. Notice that sounds can be heard in front, to the back, to the right, and to the left, and even above with the fans. In a 360-degree way, consciousness goes all around us. And with that same open and receptive attention coming back into the body, feeling the sensations connected with breathing, notice how some sensations arise on breathing in and different sensations on breathing out. You can start to tune into the feeling of an in-breath, the feeling of an out-breath. Energetically, they're a little different. If the sensations of breath are more apparent to you in one specific area, then it may be quite natural to let the attention settle there, in the belly, the nose, or the chest. Some people like to feel the breath through the whole body, maintaining kind of a frame of attention that takes in the whole body, and noticing the impact of breathing within that. Some people like to feel the trace of the breath in the body, the way it enters the nose and expands the lungs and then expands the belly and reverses on its way out. Following the whole breath, one whole breath is also fine. So hopefully at this point in the retreat, each of you has found a focus that serves well for you as an anchor, whether it's breath, body posture, or sounds. Something that you can reliably come back to again and again. That's your avenue of connection to the present moment. A suitable focus. It's not disturbing. And essentially, the way we'll be suggesting today that you practice is to stay with that anchor as long as nothing else predominant is presenting itself in the body. So you're staying with the anchor, and then if something stronger comes along, felt as a sensation in the body, that naturally calls the attention, don't stay fixed to the anchor. Don't feel you have to hold on to the anchor. Let the attention naturally move to where it's being called. Or maybe there's pressure in the knee. Maybe there's the touch of the hands. Maybe there's slight tension in the shoulder. When the attention is drawn there, let it move. And as it lands with the new sensation, let it really feel it. Don't hold back. Let the attention go right into the center of the new sensation and let it be felt. Get to know its bare physical nature. It might be in the area of tension or tightness. It might be a sense of vibration, pulsation, or tingling. It might be warm or cold. It could be expanding. It could be contracting. It could be pressure. Get to know it in its bare physical nature. The part of the body that it's occurring in is not this bare physical nature. That's a concept. Head, knee, shoulder, hand. Those are concepts. But as we get close to the reality of the sensation, its physical nature will express itself in one of these forms: pulsing, tingling, vibration, pressure, warm, cool, etc. See if you can notice just that physical nature. Once the attention is drawn to that sensation, it's helpful, once you've felt into it, to name it. If you're using the noting practice, see if you can find a note that expresses its characteristic: pulsing, tingling, vibration, etc. Then you can let the attention stay with that sensation as long as it's still predominant, as long as it's drawing the attention. Sometimes that's just a few seconds. If the sensation is strong, it may be the better part of a meditation period. Either way is fine. But if the sensation subsides, stops being predominant, then let the attention return gently to your anchor: breath, posture, sounds. But be open to the next predominant sensation and let the attention easily move there, connecting with its physical nature, and if you're using noting, naming that simply, one word if possible. Again, with the noting practice, try to keep the note really light, like 5 to 10% of the overall experience. Most of the attention directed to just the sensation itself, feeling the sensation. You don't need to do anything with it, but just notice it, feel it. If the sensation that draws the attention has the nature of being painful, then this can present a new kind of challenge. We want to develop real skill in relating to these sensations. So first, don't be afraid when some pain shows up. It's not actually dangerous. It's not threatening, except in very rare circumstances. But sometimes there's a reluctance to go into it, a reluctance to feel it. So notice if that's there. Well, there's a little shying away, mild form of disliking. And see if you can overcome that and let the attention go right into the painful sensation and really let it be felt. Notice its bare physical nature. Is it in the form of a pressure, an ache, a pinching, a stabbing, contraction, heat, cold? Name it if that's helpful, if you're noting. And as long as that pain remains predominant, see if you can keep the attention with it. You'll find out in doing this, you don't actually have to fix the pain or make it go away. Pain can actually be a good focus in meditation, because the mind, it's drawing the mind naturally, and so the attention can naturally rest in it. But there are a couple of other things that happen when we're with pain. One of them is because of a long-standing habit of avoidance, the mind might want to skitter away in thinking. You might notice that when painful sensations are felt, thoughts ramp up as an escape hatch. If that is happening, see if you can note the thinking and gently return the attention to be with the painful sensation. As far as possible, learning to stay steady in the direct contact with pain. The other thing that you might notice is different flavors of aversion coming strongly into the mind. Often there's an unease in feeling pain. So it's very likely that there will be some disliking going on. It could be mild or strong. When the disliking of pain is strong and turns into felt aversion, that becomes a force in the mind that will cause a contraction in the body. When the body is in contraction through aversion, that contraction itself may feed the pain, strengthen the pain. So if you can, notice the presence of aversion as the mind's reaction and see if you can soften the mind in its relationship to the sensation. If you can soften the mind, that will have a softening effect on the pain. The pain may still be there, but it may soften a little and it will be held with a better attitude, more acceptance. Sometimes the response to pain may be anger, resentment, irritation. This isn't supposed to be happening in my meditation. So if that grows, it will also cause a contraction in the body. Pain is not an indication that you've done anything wrong. It happens to all of us in meditation. So don't make it a grounds for judging. It's just part of the body's natural expression. Again, try to soften the attitude, soften in relation to the pain. If you've been with the pain for a while, you may notice that the mind is getting weary. You know, it's tiring. It takes effort to be in touch with pain again and again. So if you find the mind getting tired, find a way to give it some ease, give it some space. And that would mean changing the focus of your meditation. You might open your eyes. You might go to sounds for a while. You might go back to your anchor. Find something neutral or pleasant in your field of experience and let the mind have some relief from that ongoing contact with what's difficult. If it feels comfortable to stay in that more neutral focus, do that. It's fine. If you feel re-energized, you can bring the attention back to the painful sensation. If you ever feel overwhelmed with the pain, feel free to adjust the posture. Stand up, shift slowly and mindfully. Then the meditation won't be interrupted as you make that slight shift. And again, if no particular sensation is drawing the attention, than being content to rest with your anchor, with the body, with sounds, or with the breath. So in this way, the meditation can become a very natural sort of flow within the body. Posture or breath, sounds or sensations that draw us. Doesn't need forcing. You'll discover this easy flow of attention with the anchor, and then being willing to go a little beyond into the specifics of sensations. As you're exploring sensations throughout the body and connect with an individual sensation, you can add at this point a little bit of investigation and ask, is there anything solid and unchanging in that sensation? Or as you pay attention to it, can you see its own nature of change? Whether it be due to vibrations or pulsation or a tingling quality. Even with pain, does it go up and down a little in intensity, moment to moment? Add just a little bit of interest in looking for the manifestation of change in sensations. So in your meditation today, and it may serve you for the rest of the retreat, for that matter, and as we unfold the instructions, you'll kind of see how this applies. The anchor is a very helpful place to prefer. So if nothing else strongly is drawing the attention, it's really nice to have a place you're comfortable to rest the attention. But we're not clinging to it. So if something else comes up that naturally draws our attention, our interest, we easily let it move there, let the attention move, and we make the relationship of mindfulness with the new focus. So today we're practicing in that way with sensations. As we open up, we'll practice with other focuses as well. So continue to take your anchor and the field of sensations in the body as your focus for today, appreciating the opportunity to work skillfully with pain, even if difficult. Okay, I'd like to do a couple of the questions. There were two questions focused around thought, so I thought I'd start with that. And one was highlighting the alternation between craving for peace and calm and the aversion to the thinking that blocked that. Does this sound familiar? This is kind of the meditator's basic dilemma, right? This is what we're dealing with moment after moment. So thoughts come in a lot for most of us, especially at this stage in the retreat when we're still settling. Sometimes they go on and on and on. So how to relate? First, you know, the desire for calm itself is a form of striving. It's a wholesome intention, it's a wholesome aspiration, but if it shows up as craving, which means there's frustration and it's not coming, then it's in an unwholesome area called striving. So just to recognize that the craving itself in the moment for a particular experience is not helpful. This is the second noble truth. So we're landing in the realm of suffering. The more we see that again and again, oh, if I want this particular experience, I'm going to suffer. Wisdom will learn from that. And we will let go more and more of that craving while still maintaining the aspiration to move in that direction. They're really two different impulses. So we want to do what's skillful to develop states like calm. But if we want it already, this is not the patience that Greg was talking about last night. All we can do is plant the seeds, and we don't have to yell at them. We just plant them by moments of mindfulness. That's the best we can do. And then we let nature take care of their growing up. We know we're doing the right thing to head in the direction of calm. It was like I used to go on road trips with my parents when I was a kid, and we'd drive for 2 days to get to my grandmother's house. And the kids, us kids, would be sitting in the back seat and we'd go into our parents, are we there yet? Are we there yet? That's craving. Our parents knew the route. And they knew how to drive and they knew how long it was going to take. That's patience. Now, we don't know exactly how long it's going to take. It's more than 2 days. But the destination is known. The destination of peace, freedom, whatever you want to call it, is known. It'll take as long as it takes, and we don't have to keep asking, are we there yet? So this is the patience part. Now we're going to talk more about working with thoughts in a couple of days in detail. But for now, I just want to say one thing I found really helpful. If there's a kind of thought that's running over and over and over, repetitive thought pattern, drop out of the thinking part and ask yourself, is there an underlying emotion here? Because often there's something driving the thinking, and that's on the emotional level. It may not even show up in the words of the thoughts, but it's a mood and a feeling in the body that's providing the engine power for the thinking to go off from. If you can move from the thinking and connect with that emotion, you're at the source. That's where the mindfulness can be most powerful. So if you can, move from repetitive thinking into the underlying emotion. That would be helpful. Another question came up around bowing, and I don't really think we've explained much about that yet, so I'll just take a couple of minutes. Bowing in this setting is entirely optional. You'll probably see that most of us do some form of bowing to the Buddha when we come in or before we sit down, or bowing at the end when we leave the hall. And that's an expression of our, what I would call our devotion or our reverence or our appreciation for the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. You know, they all kind of go together for us. If you have that feeling of reverence or devotion, then I encourage you to express it in some way that feels right for you. If you don't have that, there's no need. It's fine, just come in and sit down. You don't need to make any gesture toward the stage. This is just a wooden statue. And so we're not reverent to a wooden statue. But I want to say something about one thing the Buddha said. He said, it's difficult to dwell on the spiritual path without reverence or devotion to something. He said, I looked around the world with my psychic vision, and he said, I did not see anyone more skilled than myself in ethical conduct, meditation, or wisdom. And that's not an expression of arrogance. That's just, for him, a statement of fact. And yet I wanted to dwell with devotion and reverence, so I chose to dwell in devotion to the Dhamma. That is always present for us as an aspect of devotion. Now, I myself find devotional practices very rewarding, inspiring, helpful. They really touch my heart. And my heart has been touched by the Dharma and the teachings, you know, for so many years. There's a lot of gratitude there for me. So I love to express it through devotional chanting, through bowing, through other offerings. And the chanting that Greg leads in the evening is one form of that. The bowing can be one form of that. But it's not essential. It's only if it speaks to you, if it's something that you feel drawn to. When we encountered these teachings in Asia, there were many more devotional elements in the monasteries and the meditation centers that we practiced in that we haven't brought over. So if you think we're at all heavy on the devotional stuff, you ain't seen nothing yet. So little by little, I think we're starting to, you know, those of us in this country are starting to appreciate a little more of those devotional energies. They're powerful. There's a whole branch, as you probably know, in yoga called bhakti. Bhakti yoga, devotional yoga, where that is the main engine of spiritual development. So it's a wonderful thing if it draws you. And it may not at this point, but if it does, it's a wonderful thing to express. What are we devoted to when we bow to the Buddha? So it's not the statue. It is a representation of the physical human being, the man who lived 2,500 years ago. But that came up in his lifetime. There was somebody who was following him and thought, oh, he's so handsome. This Buddha fella, you know, he's so handsome, I really want to be devoted to that. And the Buddha happened to read the person's mind, and he said, if you mistake this body for an object of devotion, you're missing the point. And he said, one who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. One who sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma. So it's really in devotion to the Dhamma that we bow. And one of the aspects of the Dhamma is our own capacity for awakening. The same capacity the Buddha realized fully, we also have. It's in each of us. It takes a while to appreciate that. But that capacity for enlightenment is within each of us right now. That capacity is what I feel devoted to. That capacity is what the Buddha manifested so fully. So, if that connects, it's a beautiful thing. Okay, a few announcements. There will be a guided meditation this afternoon in the Brahmaviharas, and we're going to start with the introduction of loving-kindness meditation. This is optional. It's at the 3:30 sitting. Greg is going to lead it this afternoon, so you can come and get a hit from his metta heart. A lovely experience. And then each Tuesday afternoon at 3:30 in that sitting, from 3:30 to 4:30, one of us will be here to lead a guided meditation. If you're staying for the 3 months, what usually happens is in the other half, the other team will go through the other Brahmaviharas. So compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. They'll give guidance in that. In these 6 weeks, we're going to give guidance in loving kindness because it's the foundation in our tradition for the other three. So please come, even if you're a member of the I Hate Metta Club. It's fine. You know, come and check it out. We have a little gap, as you may have noticed, in the practice meeting schedule. So this morning, three of us, Greg and Sally and I, are doing our practice meetings. But today, Carol and Vance and Don are off, and they're going to resume their practice meetings tomorrow. So please check the board. We've indicated whether we're Tuesday or Wednesday. This week, today is Tuesday, if you're lost. So if you're up, basically, to be seen, meaning you were seen 2 days ago, you will be scheduled for meeting either today or tomorrow, so please check the board for that. And then there will be a day off for you as well. So there's a little gap in the rhythm. You'll figure it out. Monica will be offering sign-ups this afternoon. And if you don't have a scheduled practice meeting, feel free to sign up to see her this afternoon. And in general, please do check the bulletin board regularly. Our basic minimum is kind of once a day. Please check, because if there's a note for you from a teacher or from outside, that's where we'll post it. Please check for your practice meeting so that you stay current with us. And with that, that will be appreciated. And because I have 2 minutes left, I want to talk a little bit about eating meditation. So the dining hall is one of the most difficult places to stay mindful in the whole retreat, in my experience. You walk in and there's so much going on, and everybody's there. Sometimes there's a little bit of urgency around the food. Is there going to be enough? Do I need to get to the front? Can I get in ahead of that person? Etc. So, tension runs high in the dining room. So, the preparation for eating meditation is, as you're walking toward the dining hall, put your mindfulness on high alert. And that is, I want to start practicing carefully now as I'm walking in, because I'm going to start feeling some things. You know, it may be that urgency, it may be the press of other people, it may be some judgments, it may be the fear of being judged. When we all come together and we're moving and acting, we see each other more. And there can be both judgment and fear of judgment. So as you move in, just resolve you're going to be extra attentive. What's the whole experience of moving into the dining hall? And there was one suggestion, I think Joseph made the suggestion, move to seeing meditation, mindfulness of seeing. That puts a big frame around the whole experience. It's really helpful. Then you're in line, you get your food. You can start to notice, I think what's really helpful from this point on, is attention to arms and hands. You could even do noting, you know, reaching, lifting the serving spoon, moving, dishing, replacing, stepping, lifting, serving spoon. Moving. And like that, you can make notes of every movement of the hands and arms, and that will really help keep you connected to the moment by moment unfolding. And then you take your dish, walking, stepping, 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 sitting, placing the dish on the table. And as you start to eat, you can also stay with arms and hands, reaching, lifting, moving, placing in the mouth, chewing, chewing, tasting, tasting, swallowing, reaching, lifting. And really encourage you to put the fork down after you've filled your mouth and don't reach for it again until you've swallowed. That will introduce a little bit of space into the whole experience, because eating can tend to be a little compulsive. You know, it's our survival depends on it. It's no wonder it's a little compulsive. But you can slow it down a little bit to really be with each moment of that experience. And that can make it a really continuous period of mindfulness. So I encourage you to play with that. Play with careful attention to all the activities of eating. At this point in the retreat, we used to pass out raisins and do an exercise where we would guide you through eating raisins. But we decided you're smart enough now. You don't need that anymore. So we're just doing it verbally. So please try. See if it keeps you present and centered. And, I mean, the meals have been so good so far. So it's something to look forward to.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.